Hey, hey, welcome to the Listen Bitch podcast, your go-to destination for unlocking your full potential and embracing that extraordinary possibility within you. This is a journey of self-discovery and empowerment as you explore the transformative power of stepping into greatness. Come into alignment with your God-given power and gifts. Unleash your soul and learn to co-create a life that you love. As you become the writer of your own story, here in this podcast, you're going to find that inspiration. You're going to find practical tips and that sometimes abrasive nudge to take the leap of faith towards your dreams. You are in the right place. Buckle up so we can unleash your inner badass. All right, you guys. Today, I have Mary Blissiplin on the line. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about her being the founder of that Blissiplin. Okay, she's a trauma therapist and a mindfulness teacher, and I'm excited to get to know her. We'll do this together. So, Mary, why don't you come on in and tell us, give us the background, who you are, where you came from, and then we'll just take the journey to Blissiplin.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So, you know, it's been a really long and interesting journey, as the best of them are, of course. Mm-hmm. And I came through it through my own depression, a lot of it, and through my own healing practice. And then sometime into that, I became a therapist and did 4 years of training in that, and then 3 years of training in somatic experiencing, and built. And there came a moment, maybe about 10 years ago, where I realized that, you know, we were great therapists and mindfulness teachers at sort of addressing the terrible feelings. We were really getting pretty good at it. And there's this sort of assumption that when you get to neutral, then you kind of know how to live. But it turned out that was not true. That was incorrect. And so I started exploring positive psychology and all the ways people were working to teach people how to be present and joyful in our usually actually pretty okay lives that we're complaining about, you know? Right. And eventually developed into this practice I have been calling Blissiplin for the last 10 years or so.
What drew you into your job as a trauma therapist?
You know, it's, again, long story, so I'll try and make it short, but mostly, honestly, my own healing. That I went from being just full of despair and suicidal ideation most days for years, you know? And I went from there to being pretty happy, you know? And yeah, able to deal with difficult feelings. So that was a big part of it. And then I actually started, do you know Thich Nhat Hanh? He's a Zen mm-hmm. teacher. So just to give you a clue about how important he is, Martin Luther King nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize.
So okay, that's nice.
And the Dalai Lama referred to him as one of the great teachers of our time. So he died a few years ago, but I was his student for about 14 years. And he basically took the mindfulness teachings and made them neutral so non-Buddhists could activate them, could access mm-hmm. them. He even wrote a book called Jesus and Buddha as Brothers. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to be deeply present and how to connect with that inner light. And I just realized at some point I wanted to do it myself. And I actually considered becoming a monastic in that tradition because that mm-hmm. was a place I knew I could do that work and do outreach with people and help them. But it wasn't quite right for me. And then I found the program that I studied in for 4 years. And mm-hmm. I actually became an interfaith minister through that program. And that was my path. You know, it's like all paths. It sort of opens up. Mm-hmm. You step forward and then you discover a new place, you know, and then another step and another.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, especially as humans, is that we think that we're going to get a gold star for our suffering. Like yes. We think that's to be celebrated and that's a thing. And that's why everybody should give us a pass. What were some of the things you were dealing with when you were going through like the worst parts of your life? Because this is my perspective, Mary, and this is kind of what I teach my listeners or, you know, talk to them on, is that we're all in the arena. Like your suffering doesn't make you special.
Yeah.
We're all getting our ass kicked. On my best days, there's stuff that I could literally lose my mind over. And it sure. is in that choice of perspective. It's in being mindful that I'm like, you know, you can never have a bad day once you open up your perspective to what you want to see, right? Rather than, you know, focusing on the trauma. So what were some of the things that could be relatable to people today that you were, you know, struggling with that on your worst moments, the days you contemplated, you know, unaliving yourself, all of those things? What were you going through?
You know, for me, it was always based in feeling worthless. And the feeling worthless was based in kind of being taught I was worthless as a kid. And that feeling was so pervasive, it just attached to everything. So I was capable of feeling shame whether I was successful at something or failed at something. Either way, shame was ubiquitous. And so this feeling of being bad, of being a worthless person, of being a burden, and it had nothing to do with how much I accomplished and nothing to do with how much I helped people. That was one of my particular, you know, like red herring journeys. I just tried to be really good and really help people thinking that would do it. And it didn't, you know, because nothing will replace, nothing will be held by self-hate in a loving way. Self-hate's just going to hate you. And so I had to learn how to be with my mind and how to soothe. I did nervous system work and did lots of mindfulness work. And
was there a level of forgiveness you had to process for, you know, just being taught that you were worthless?
Yeah, and I was resistant to forgiveness. And I actually want to really respect when people are, because I kind of think there's a few ways people go. Sometimes I sort of feel like there's three ways people go. You, if you're dealing with a childhood where you're, you know, receiving a lot of abuse or neglect, either way, you either step into the role of being the one who's got it together, who's going to save everyone. That's one I did. Or you become a rebel and you step away and say, you know, fuck all you guys. I don't give a shit. I'm leaving. Yep. There you go. That's my wife. Or the third one you do is you become the abuser. You become aggressive. You become angry all the time. And of course, this is a gross generalization. But for the people who step into the, I'm going to help, I'm going to be the one who saves, you become the parentified child and often very, very young, you take on a lot of responsibilities. I don't think forgiveness is a first step in there. I think anger is a really important step. And so it sort of depends on which way we go. If we went to anger, great, then we got to come back for anger. But if we went to like understanding and being the savior, then we actually have to reclaim our anger really strongly before forgiveness will be real. Because we've been sort of practicing forgiveness, but actually just taking on everybody's burden ourselves. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And what was your inspiration for mindfulness? How did you get there? If you're not in the environment of someone that's in the world of healing, what brought you there? I mean,
well,
I know,
me,
yeah.
It was actually 9/11.
Okay.
Because I was living in New York City, so it was really intense and terrifying. And I had actually been a peace activist for some 6 years at that point. I was lobbying Congress to pass a bill for a department, cabinet level Department of Peace. And I was teaching workshops and I was doing meditation and stuff. But what happened after 9/11, I was just so personally just overwhelmed by living in New York at that time and what was going on. It was very intense time, but also so disappointed that we just raced to war so quickly. And I needed a huge break. And I actually suddenly one day I said, wait, I can go to this place in France I'd heard about called Plum Village, and I can go. I had thought about it for years. It's where Thich Nhat Hanh was. So I went and I spent 7 days there, or I think I was like 9 days there. And those 9 days were so powerful and so transformative. All I was doing is just practicing mindfulness all day, every day. Then when I got back, I said, all right, this is it. This is what I've got to do. And I found a group to practice with, and I started practicing with them every week. For 7 years, I went every week. And that was the first time in my life I started to get a hold of some understanding that I could direct my mind, that I could control my thoughts and feelings to some extent, you know, sort of like driving a great big vehicle. Like you're kind of all over the road, but you're staying between the lines, you know? So that was my first clue that I might not just be at the mercy of my mind.
Right. And then tell us about Blissipline.
Yeah. So So I like to think about an empowerment scale. I have a little thing that I use to describe it where there's like six categories, and in the middle is a dotted line, and above the line is things that are sort of pleasant feelings, and below the line are unpleasant, or I like to say the happy and the crappy, right?
Yep.
And so what I realized was because we as therapists and as mindfulness teachers too, actually, often are so focused on dealing with difficult feelings and soothing difficult feelings and dealing with difficult thoughts and difficult people. And actually almost everyone comes to me with that question, how do I deal with a difficult thing, right? There's this huge deficit of practice on the upper half of the scale. And I started to realize that is an important discipline. You have got to learn to focus the upper half of the scale. You've got to learn to practice it. You've got to learn to take a moment and savor it. You've got to learn to take something you love and find more ways to bring it into your life. And so, and one day I actually saw a meme a friend of mine posted that said something about bliss-ipline. I was like, oh, that's the word I'm looking for. And I grabbed the meme. I said, can I use this? And she said, yeah, it's not my word. So I started teaching it. And I founded a group called the Blissplin Group on Facebook 9 years ago. We're gonna have our 10th anniversary next March.
Nice.
And we started practicing together. In fact, I'll just tell you one more thing about this. I made a decision. I'm gonna practice Blissplin for myself. And I've always been this way. I get determined and I do something. And I said, I'm going to start on like the first day of the month, like January 1, or I think it was February, actually, February 1. And I'm going to wake up every single morning and I'm going to deliberately, first thing in the morning, turn towards positive feelings, turn towards hopefulness, determination, you know, intention, stuff like that. And the amazing thing is, the first 30 days, I failed every day. Every day. It was so much harder than I thought. And I thought, whoa, okay. So then I, the second month, I said, all right, I'm going to try again. But I started doing all kinds of little visual aids on my bedside table, and I made a little recordings to listen to. And then I succeeded like maybe eight times. And I was like, holy moly, if this is this hard for me, and I was already doing quite well at that point,
Right.
it's got to be hard. And that for everyone. And that's when I started the Blissipline group. I was like, let's do this together.
Yeah. So day one, you know, or when people are in that struggle of like, this is hard, what is the next move to keep them committed? Because I think that's the struggle, right? Is that, you know, I could sit here and say, I'm going to make this change in my mindset. I'm not going to be reactive to my kids anymore. You
Yeah.
know, I'm not going to be reactive. And then I
From
walk out
now
there. Yeah, right. And I walk out there and my kids have a mess and I'm like, oh my God, you guys. And I totally reacted. So I'm like, oh, forget it. This is too hard.
Yeah.
Like, I see that in people. And, you know, I talk to my listeners about what I've used and what I do to, I'm not that person anymore. I've practiced stoicism quite a bit. And also something I've caught myself doing when I am saying, you know, I want to be mindful about this. When it doesn't happen in an instant, 9 times out of 10 people are quitting.
Yeah,
They're just not going to
exactly.
think about it again.
Yeah.
Something that's been good for me too in my own mindfulness is that I really have to, I it's that labeling, right? Like when I'm pissed off, I don't have to say that's a bad feeling. That's it. I'm just pissed off. I'm angry
Yeah.
right now. And
Beautiful.
we do this like good and bad label and
Totally.
like we're poisoning ourselves, you know? It's the same thing with I've noticed in my relationship with food. Food is not good or bad. It's just food. Sometimes I can eat something that's going to make me feel amazing. Sometimes I eat something and afterwards I'm like, oh, I feel like shit. Didn't make it good or bad. It just was food. And I know how I feel. So probably wouldn't reach for that next
Yeah,
time, you know?
yeah.
And it's the same thing with those feelings of just like when we're making it a label of good or bad, we're teaching our kids that they don't have full expression, that there is some things they're allowed to feel and not. Yeah, I just went
Yeah.
off on a tangent, but back to that point of like people
Well, I
just
think that's a really
quitting.
good tangent, a really good one, because that's the truth. And you know, of course, we do this with our kids because we didn't learn how to do it. We're just beginning to learn it's okay to have feelings. You know
Right.
what I mean? So how are we going
Right.
to pass this on to our kids? So we all have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
In fact, I want to say any parent who makes any significant change in how they treat their kids over how they were treated, I give them major kudos. I think that's one of the
Yeah.
hardest thing of all. And I honestly think that you guys are the most important people on the planet. For
Well, I'm
real.
going to be honest. This is the thing, and this is the kicker, and something I've realized as a parent. I have six kids. My two oldest, 22 and 20, they got a really young, hurt version of me, and that wasn't their fault. That's nothing they asked for. That's not their problem. That's not their problem. So what happened is I've made this shift. I made a full. I am not the same person. For them. And there's a lot of pain with that. And I want people to be aware of that. There's a lot of pain because those girls resent me and they're pissed off because they're like, these kids don't have to deal with who I had to deal with. And that's not fair. So dealing with that too, there's blowback. So it's not like, there's not, it's hard. It's not hard to make the decision. It's not hard to change. It's hard to face the blowback from doing that. Because the
I
changing was
hear
not
ya.
hard. Once it's in your awareness that you want to be the best version for your kids, once you wake up, that's not hard. It is not hard to say, you know what? I'm not going to react anymore. I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to try to control your feelings because no one was allowed to throw tantrums, right? Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. Now I'm like, cry your head off, kid. Just if the neighbors call the cops because they think you're being beat, you're the one answering the door to tell them it's not the situation, right? Cry as much as you want, do whatever. That's not, none of that was hard. Changing was not hard. What's hard is like having to live with who I was to the older girls and who I am to these younger girls without guilt, without shame, without, there's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of like, I wish I could have been this for them. And it's part of what, I teach the girls now. Like, I can't change anything I've done. But I am here for you as much, I am, I'm here. So the hard part, honestly, is facing your own demons. It's not the change. I think that's so, the change is easy once you wake up. It is that, it's the aftermath.
And I mean, self-forgiveness is one of the hardest things of all, but it's also partly because we don't know what to do with it. Like we get it, like we did something wrong and we regret it, and now what, right? And so it is, I think there's a complexity of life too. We just have to be willing to acknowledge, like, okay, I'm 59, right? I'm going to be 60 next year, which is crazy. Like, I can't even believe it, right? But I know stuff I did not know when I was 50. And when I was 50, I knew stuff I didn't know when I was 40. And when I was 40, et cetera, et cetera. And when I was 30, I was sure I was a full grown ass adult who knew everything, right?
Girl, are we ever an adult? We're all little kids out here.
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't know for sure, but I do think the maturity comes, but I just don't think it comes until your 50s. I think what's happened is we have such a kind of a youth focused culture that we actually have forgotten that everyone gets wiser. Not maybe a lot. Some people don't do much.
I was gonna say, I'm gonna disagree here because I think there's a lot of stupid walking around that has
There is
not,
a lot of stupid
they have
walking
not
around.
chosen to wake up.
No, that is true. Maybe everyone isn't, but I think everyone who tries does.
Correct.
And of course, some of us do more work than others, and we go further than others, and go further than we would have without the work, you know? But nonetheless, there's this way that we've kind of got to give our young selves a break. Like, you were a young mom.
Oh,
You
yeah.
didn't know squat, you know?
I
And your
still
girls are
don't. I'm
young. It's.
44 and I tell them all the time, like, literally, okay, I'm making dentist appointments and eye doctor appointments for my, she's gonna be 23 this week, okay? I'm making her appointments still, right? She's like, Mom, I'm just a little kid, right? I'm just a little kid, Mom. And I'm looking at her like, Girl, I'm still just a little kid too. Like, I am not, I'm winging it. This is my first rodeo. This is my first, life experience. So, and all the time, they question choices I made. And I'm like, girl, first of all, I was in survival mode. Okay. 22 years old is a baby. And that's when I had a baby. And I had that baby without unpacking and dealing with my trauma. I ran from my trauma and she was my shield. She was my, I'm like, oh,
Well,
life
let's
is
be
good.
real. You could not have unpacked and worked it by then. There wasn't
No,
time.
there was no
So,
option.
right. So
No.
there's no like, you should have done that before you had a kid nonsense. You know, so this is
Right.
the complexity of life. This is the reality.
Exactly.
It's gonna be this way, you know? It's gonna be, and I'm gonna say, I bet you, I'm just gonna make a bet. Let's check in 10 years. 10 years from now, you'll be 54, right? And like I said, I'm 59. So 54 was even a while ago now. It's really interesting. Plus, it all accelerates. I'm gonna say 10 years from now, you might actually be like, you know what? I actually don't feel like a baby anymore. I feel like a grown up.
I
I
will
think it
be,
just takes longer than
you'll be
we
the first
think.
person I call when I'm
You let
like,
me
wow, I
know.
actually feel like a grown up because I still am
Because
just like,
I
you
swear, we're
know.
just putting it on. And in our 30s, we're really putting it on. But in our 40s, but here's another thing I'm going to say. You know Dunning-Kruger? Do you know what that is?
No.
It's this psychological thing where the less you know, the more you think you know. And the more you know, the less you think you know because you know what you don't know, right? And so what actually happens is you do know a lot more. Like say you know 10% before and you didn't realize the
That's being
90% you
very
didn't know.
generous. I'm going to say I'm at a solid 3% that I
Okay.
know.
Say you used to know 0.3%. And now you know 3%, but you know there's 97%. So it makes you think you don't know very much. But when you knew the 0.3%, you didn't know there was anything else. You thought you knew everything. And so this is a phenomenon that is a fact of aging. And at some point, we realize, oh, yes, there is an infinite amount of knowledge, but I know a lot more than I used to.
I know a lot of what not to do in life. I think I've collected a whole baggage of that, but it's one of those things of just like, even, you know, I was the person that said, fuck you guys, I'm out of here, you know, and well, not by choice. I mean, I was booted out, right? Anyway, so in that experience, people try to, you know, I was estranged from one of my sisters for probably a solid almost 10 years. And we talk now, but there's conversations where she tries to bring up the past and she's like, remember this? And I'm like, I don't genuinely remember. And here's the thing, I don't live there anymore. If I hurt you, I'm sorry, but that's not, I don't live there, dude. That was 40 years ago. Like that's, and so that's another thing that I, you know, try to tell my kids is that, look, I don't live there anymore. I love you guys. I can help you process the feelings. You know, I can be the punching bag in the moment that you're feeling angry because I get that, but that's not who I am today. So you don't get to be disrespectful. Like there has to be boundaries that I set up of like, you know I hurt you at one point, but we don't stay there.
And we have to learn how to do process and repair, you know? And so you're doing that with your girls, you're learning how to do it, and these young adults who are now, you know, they actually, of course, they're at that stage where they kind
They
of
know
starting to think they know
everything.
everything,
Okay,
right?
yeah. No, my kids know
So,
everything. I'll just make that very clear. I'm the biggest idiot they have ever met because they know everything. And part of that wisdom is like at the core of who I am, I can see their perspective, but then I'm like, girl, you don't know shit. Like life is gonna smack you so hard when reality comes and I will be there with the band-aid because it's gonna suck.
And you know, we know when we were their age, if anyone had said that to us, we would have been
Oh.
like, God, these old people are so fucking deluded. They don't know
There,
shit.
yeah, exactly.
So here we are. And this is it. This is just the unfolding. But I would like to come back to your original question. You know?
Welcome to my neurodivergent world here.
Mine
We go
too,
all over
man.
the place. It's
I'll tell you,
fine.
I was doing this thing recently where I was like, what are the challenges for me as a business person? And I literally wrote this. I said, well, first of all, I'm very distract. And then I went off and I did something. And then I came back and I was like, a bull. It's really like, but you know, that's how it
That's
goes.
the reality.
Well, so this question of how to help people actually practice, right? Because they try something and it doesn't work and they give up or they don't even know how to try. And the reason I want to come back to is that is literally why I created Blissipline, because that's the question I've been asking myself. And can I plug a little thing I'm doing here?
Please plug all the things. Like we want to
Okay.
know all the things.
So literally, right 2 days ago, I announced a new course I've been doing these 21-day empowerment challenges, alignment challenges, things like this over the years, and they've been great. But I've been really like, the last 2 years, I've been sitting down and really writing what will work, what will work. And I've been, the people who are in my ongoing groups, like, what has worked for you? What is, I've been really working at it because I want to make it super available. And so I'm right now launching a brand new course that we're going to start this summer. And I think it's going to be 6 weeks. 21 days just won't hack it. But they're going to be really easy 6 days, weeks, where we're going to literally take, one of my mottos is you got to rock it till you grok it. You can read about it. You can watch a video. You can listen to something. You can be like, oh, she's so smart. That's amazing. It's not yours. You don't own it. It's not yours till you do it. Once you rock it, once you do it, you feel it, you experience it, you know it. It's just the riding a bike thing. Then it's yours, right? So the whole question is, how do you get people to rock it? So the course is all built around implementing delightful, pleasant, in the moment, better feeling practices, and then building on that. And week four or so, we're going to get to the negative stuff, but not week one. I want to start week one. We're going to build on the happiness, build on the joy, see how possible it is. And so I've really laid it out carefully. I'm literally, I've done this a lot, right? So this is like the culmination of a lot of doing it pretty well for a long time. But this one, I've really laid it out carefully. And I'm literally waking up every morning these days. Like, I'll be like, oh, it's so early, and I'm like, oh, wait, and I'll have an idea, and I grab my phone, and I just start writing into my phone, and then I put down my phone and go back to sleep. So I'm very inspired, and I think it's going to be super great. And if people want to find out about it, they can just go, I'll give you the links and stuff, but I have the page blissipline.life. It'll all be up there.
Okay. Yeah, everything's in the notes of this podcast episode, so people can click on anything. They can explore. I'm sure they can ask you questions. So my question is, because I imagine someone like my husband, okay, he's a bear. I would say like positivity is not his strong suit. Okay.
Right,
he's
a bear.
one of those, we love them anyway, kind of moments, but no, he's grown through a lot. I'll give him some credit there, but he's a bear. And if I was like, babe, let's take this blissipline class together. Okay. Yeah. This will be what happens. The morning of our experiments of trying to find those good feelings and all the things, he's probably going to stub his toe.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like a bunch of bad things are going to happen. He's going to be really mad. And I can't, how do you get someone like that to actually harness those good feelings when they show up to the computer screen and he's like, trying to put his slipper on, the dog chewed his slipper, you know, he spilled his coffee. He's that person that just attracts that.
You know, and however it happens, that unconscious programming will manifest those experiences. The dog will chew the slipper.
I mean, you know? It's, he is so self-proclaimed with everything. Like, he knows if he touches anything with electronics, it doesn't work. My computer, a brand new MacBook, this man could come and sit down and it's not, something's not going to work on it. Or, you know, it's just, it's that self-proclaimed, like he has just created this whole world of stuff. So what's he going to be like on day three of your program?
You know, look, that's a, you'll be a tough one. Okay. So I'm not going to pretend I know the answer for people who have a strong level of resistance to the very notion of it. But I will say this, when we can connect to what someone wants, that can be a doorway. So there's something he wants. There's something he wants so bad.
And bro, he just wants it to come easy. He doesn't want to put in the work. He just wants it to be like, he wants to be the person that wakes up and like everything just magically changed and has appeared. He doesn't realize, like, this is what I try to tell people, right? When I talk to God and I'm like, all right, look, I really want to be a patient person. God, just pour patience down on me. I know what's going to happen. When I walk out of my office, I'm going to have five levels of things testing my patience.
Yeah.
So it's not like God does not come down and say, okay, kids, your mom wanted patience today. So I need you to sit over here. I need you to pick up your toys. I hope you're done with your school. And I hope you cleaned off the table. Like that doesn't happen. The world is not going to accommodate you. It is, I prayed for patience and I get the chance to walk out of here and practice the patience, meaning I harness that reactive mode. And I realize like, okay, look, you were in your office for 2 hours. They're little kids. And it's just talking myself down off the mountain, right? Like they're little kids. Let's breathe through this. They're fine.
Right.
Is anyone bleeding?
Yeah, as anyone played, that's a really good starting point, right? Yeah, the thing is, it can be easy,
It
but
can.
changing patterns requires effort. It just does. There is no way you're going to change patterns without effort. And one of the ways that this particular course, for what it's worth, I'm trying to address it with, didn't get that sentence very good, is just put an is in there, we'll keep going. That every day you're going to do certain things. Like, for example, you're going to have coffee, or you're going to brush your teeth, or you're going to sit in traffic, or whatever it is. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to use that as the starting point. And then we're going to try and find one thing, the easiest thing on that list, and make it better. So if it's good, we're going to make it even better. And if it's not good, we're making going to make it a little bit less shitty. You know what I mean? But this acknowledgement, it's a little better, or it's a lot better. And then we're going to find another thing, make that better. You don't have to change your life. Like, there are ways people like to listen to music. If you just close your eyes and stretch while you're doing it, it'll be a whole different experience. It's little things like that. So, like when I said to you, mindfulness gave me a clue that I had some control over my mind, because I didn't think I did. It seemed like it drove me. And like I said, I was full of despair and self-loathing. But when I got a clue I had some control over my mind, that was a turning point for me. And that's what I'm trying to do here. Give people that first clue. So even if it's just you're going to go drink your coffee on the porch, so your stupid screaming kids can be screaming when you're not having, you know what I mean? Like, whatever it is. But you seize that one thing, you're like, okay, this is good. This is a good step. One thing, and then one more thing. And so we build on the success of pleasure. We build on the success of desire and allowing, like honoring what you want. Now, like you said, we're so identified with suffering, but our suffering is not that interesting. Our
And then
creativity, that's interesting.
I think a lot of people that are listening too also do this thing of like they justify the bare minimum, right? Like instead of us looking, we have to reprogram our brains. And I
We
talk
have
about
to.
this. I talk about all the ways you can do this. I personally, I do manifest. I microdose psilocybin. That literally changed my life. Like I'm able to see my emotions. I don't become them, but I was also able, like I feel the new connections in my brain. I allow that. I sit with my mind sometimes and just honor the fact that I have this new reaction process. I have this new way of being and this new way of thinking. And part of that is like we look for things that are worse, so we feel okay with being where we are, you know? Like negative people are very much the kind of people that are like, well, it could be worse. I could be a worse husband. I could be a worse father. I could be a worse wife. I could be, a worse parent. And I think we program ourselves to see how could we be worse? And then we see the horrific things all around us that will give us the proof of how we could be worse. You know, how could it be worse? Instead of like every day, like, how can I make this better? How can I make this fun? How can I make this joyful? And I mean, I just went through the transition of, for the first time in 8 years, I got a job outside of the house, bartending, which I love to do. It is so much fun. And I was there for a little over a year, and unfortunately, it wasn't going to work out with our household with my husband's schedule. So I came home. And I fought the transition a lot. And so I would have to talk to myself every day. I'm like, okay, you're working from home again. Like, what can you do? I come in my office. I'm like, what can you do to make this feel better to you? I
Yeah, for sure.
rearranged, I organized, I decluttered, little things. And it's every day when I feel that struggle of doing something, I'm like, well, if I'm going to do this, how can I make it better? You know, little things of like,
For sure.
a little reward system even. I'm doing this live stuff on TikTok, okay? And I'm only on this is tonight will be night five. And by night three, I was like, okay, I don't know that this is my thing. I don't know. I'm not having a great time, but I know consistency and commitment matters. So I'm like, why do I want to do this? What do I want at the end? I have to keep going. I have to keep going. So I want to see if this exists. Okay. So myself last night, I'm like, okay, what's going to make this better for you? Gummy worms, bring in the little snack. That's cool. I have a little snack here. I can hang out. I can talk. It is just looking for the things that are going to make it better. And I love that, because I know a lot of people that are listening, their brain is programmed for like, it could be worse, you know? Just look for the, or there's no chance it could get better.
You know, and I think the programming is really important for us to acknowledge, because I mean, there's programming and there's programming, right? And there's different levels of trauma, and there's different levels of PTSD, and there's different levels of CPTSD, which is the chronic version that comes from, you know, neglect and stuff. So there's a lot of different levels of intensity of people's programming. And there are people for whom it's really, really hard to break through that first moment into knowing, wait, I could do something, you know, just that first moment. And so that's an important piece that somehow people have to find for themselves. But the thing I just really want to say for anyone who's like doubting, you can, you can. And there is a way for you. Like, each person is individual. But when we find that one little breakthrough, and most people kind of have it already, you know, like maybe they only have it through Netflix right now. Or to be fair, maybe they only have it through alcohol right now. And I'm not even saying, of course, alcohol is fine and neutral. We know the devastation it can cause. But even so, wherever that little window of relief is, just know that is what will become available as you have more and more and more skills online to attain it. So you stop needing to binge watch Netflix for 6 hours, and you stop needing to have that second or third drink, you know, or even the first drink if it's a problem. Or you instead, you find other ways. Maybe like one of my first ways is I was coming home late and I was commuting and it was exhausting, but I would get out of the car and there was this walk of, you know, 100 feet to the house, and I would just stand out there. And I would just look up at the sky, and I would look at the stars, and I realized this is what I love, this quiet, this peace. And it would be after this long commute and a really long work day, and I'd be exhausted, but that moment. And these were the things that, it was totally personally, a lot of people, they're not going to get that from looking up at the sky, but they might, so I'll suggest it. Or they might get it from just, you know, lying down on the floor for 5 minutes. Or they might get it from just keeping, you know, something in their pocket that they love, some little verse or whatever. So we find our individual little doorways in. And once we have one, we get another and then another and another. And pretty soon we have a lot. Pretty soon we can reclaim a lot of the moments of our lives. And there's sort of this increase of general well-being that happens.
Oh, I've definitely monetized on that. And it has been like, you know, cat cuddles. I have some naked cats. Awesome. I am obsessed. And that, like literally this morning, you know, I have to go to the gym and she's cuddling me, and I knocked off 30 minutes of my workout because I'm like, I'm not leaving this. Like, this is bliss. This is giving me more endorphins than walking on the treadmill is going to do it in any moment. Also cuddling kids. I'm surrounded by them, and I still have a 5-year-old that will let me snuggle. If I tell her I'm going to have another baby, if she doesn't, she's in my lap right away, 'cause she wants to be the youngest. But all of those moments, like I keep those moments to myself. That's what I treasure. Like, when I get off of here, I'm going to go snuggle kids, 'cause I've been in here for 4 hours already today. So I'm like, what's my reward? I want to get to that, get out of this chair and get into some baby cuddles. And you've got to give yourself those windows. And it's a moment of like, sometimes I am in overwhelm and the kids are a lot, and I'm just like, you know, overstimulated to the max to protect myself from being reactive. It is a step outside, you know, it is a drive down to the beach. It is like that moment of, it's something I constantly say, like, get out into nature, because all of a sudden, if you look out into this huge world, if you look up into the sky, you realize that your problems are tiny. That thing you're making so big, and so you're letting it just absorb you. And I think that's a problem too. I've seen a little bit this week, is that we are just absorbed in a thing when everybody outside of you can see it's not a thing. You've chosen to dig your heels in, and you're like, it's a thing. And like, it really, it doesn't have to be a thing.
And it's that unconscious reactivity, you know, it's this nervous system reactivity, and it is largely out of our control, but in terms of reactivity, right? We see something, we have a reaction to it, but it's the next piece where we can bring it back into our control And you know, to be fair, sometimes people are going through really crazy hard times, and that is
Right.
true, you know.
Right.
But and honestly, I'll tell you one other thing I think that people don't talk about enough. I think some people have never yet been heard with empathy.
Right.
I just don't think anyone's ever said, "Oh my God, let me sit down and listen to you for a while," you
It's, I
know?
love that you said that because there's someone that reaches out to me every once in a while, and I know when people are going through something hard, you know, like people are going through shit. I lost some people last summer. I had 2 weeks of like not even getting out of bed. That was the shit, but
Yeah.
it didn't become a pattern. And
Yeah.
so I am going to say that I need to work on empathy when it comes to people that are in that pattern because you are spot on. Like I can connect that dot right now. They're in that pattern because they probably have never been heard. So
Yeah.
they're stuck in that cycle and they just need someone to break through.
Yeah. And until they're heard, the part of them that is desperate to be heard won't shut up. Doesn't matter how good it gets, because that part is still desperate to be heard. And I will say one of the things that I'm building, so I'll just give you a little overview of what I'm
Yeah,
doing.
please.
So this 6-week course, that's a let's do it, let's get it done kind of thing, right? And it's going to be green evergreened and available to continue to practice with groups and stuff. So it's not going anywhere, but it's a thing that you accomplish, right? And then it is a part of something much bigger, which is what I'm calling the Blissipline community. And what we're going to be developing is peer-led groups where you and this thing called co-counseling, which is a one-on-one practice, where you can actually find someone to just listen. It's not counseling in the sense that they're not going to counsel you, they're going to listen with
Listen.
empathy. And to be heard with empathy is a really, really, really big thing. And of course, not everybody's capable of it. If you're in a terrible state, you can't listen with empathy. But there's a way we can be there for one another. And so, you know, not everybody can have some personal therapist to listen to them enough. But together, we can build a community where there are places to for healing. And so, this is something I've experienced myself in wonderful ways. I've been so gifted by so many beautiful resources that have come into my life in various ways. And so, that's a big piece of it too, to create a community where there are resources of empathy. So, people can actually just have a place to feel weak. You know? We're really not supposed to have to be strong all the time. We're supposed to be a community.
And I think that's a great thing too. I talk about that a lot when I'll do random relationship course pop-ups, is that, you know, there was a point in my marriage where I had to tell my husband, like, listen, I just need you to let me have my feelings. I know that you never intend to hurt me, right? And that's, we do this to people in our lives. We all of a sudden become this victim where we put the story in our head that they're trying to hurt us when really your partner is not trying to hurt you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I ever had issues, my husband would be very defensive because he's very, I mean, it's part of the masculine, you know, energy. And I love that for him. But I'm like, listen, I know you didn't mean to hurt me, but you did. So I need you just to see that feeling from me. I need you to let me just be in this moment of like, that sucked. It
Yeah.
sucked. And like, to see my perspective of how that could have been disrespectful. And we just don't communicate enough to the people that are in our lives to be heard.
Yeah.
Instead, we tell that victim story and we kind of get stuck on that. And then we put up
Yeah.
walls. And
Yeah.
then we have this expectation of what they need to do to break it down.
Yeah,
Life doesn't work like
exactly.
that.
Right, exactly. And of course, most of us don't have any of those skills. You know, most of us just don't. And so we got to learn them somehow. And we got to learn, before you can learn them, you got to learn there's something to be learned, right? And so, like the stuff you're doing is so important because it presents it in a real way. Like here you are with your husband and your 6 kids and 2 adult kids and 1 5-year-old. Like you're really walking the life, walking the talk of life.
We're
And
in the
so,
arena, you guys,
yeah,
getting our ass
right.
kicked every day.
Exactly. And so it's so helpful for people to begin to say, okay, yes, life is really complicated and obviously really hard, like last summer that you had some massive loss that took you out, right? And somehow there's something that's helping this person. What is out there? What is possible? And honestly, I think a lot of people are still just beginning to wake up to the possibility that there's something that will help them. you know? So we just got to keep putting the word out however we do.
Yeah, that's why I can't ever give up on this podcast. And
Yeah.
you guys know that. You know we're not monetized. So feel free if you're getting any value from this. You've got listenbitchdonations.com because I pay out of pocket to have this podcast because it's that important to me that people know what's possible. And if every day I have the conversation and I bring people on here that can have the conversation to say, like, this is possible, think eventually, someone's going to be like, okay, I've been listening to this bitch for a year. Maybe she knows what she's talking about. She doesn't know a lot, but she does know it's possible. And that's all you can hope for people is for them to know there's a way out of the hamster wheel, Tornado energy is what I tell my clients. It's tornado energy. You don't have to live there. That sucks. And it's killing you. I mean, your nervous system. And that's the thing I love about our bodies. I've done so much, studying on my own of just like how our brains work, how, our nervous system works, and all these things. Like, I'm in total control. Total control. There is a million things that could be happening around me, and I get to decide. Like, I get to keep my power. And I am a rebellious type of person. So for anybody to have any kind of idea that they have control over me, never. I will never let them see me sweat. Okay. So that's part of like my power and my stoicism of like, it's not even a matter of I have to hold it in anymore. I don't even have to have the feeling like I'm sweating. I get to choose. And I think we just have no idea how powerful we are when it comes to how we can heal ourselves, how our brain works, how our nervous system works, all of this. All of this.
And to be fair, it's pretty new information, right? And so
Yeah.
it's interesting that even the therapy field has just barely begun to catch
Scratch the
up in
surface.
general with the somatic healing stuff. And that's what's been being taught for 25 years, you know, but it isn't, it's all pretty new stuff, you know? And
Yeah.
so you're pretty much out here on the cutting edge, and that's really important to say, look, this is possible. So
Yeah.
yeah, I appreciate you talk about I was gonna say neurodiversity, neuroplasticity. I
Yeah.
appreciate you talk about that because it, literally when I was at the beginning of my training, it was right about the time they were discovering neuroplasticity existed. Like
And
until that
that's
point,
wild to me. It's
we
so
were
wild to me.
literally being taught you don't
Yes,
grow
your
neurons.
brain
That's what they
can
said.
never repair. Exactly. Your brain is what it is. You're screwed. Like, that was a
Insane.
thing that blows my mind is that I just can't even comprehend how they didn't, how they not see that.
I know, I'm with you. And
It's
yet,
wild.
it was what it was, right? So then they had this discovery. And since then, we've been discovering more and more and more about how the brain does grow, what makes the brain grow, which portions of the brain can you grow to develop more capacity for calmness? Like, there's
Yes.
this amazing guy, his name is Dawson Church. Have you come across him?
No, you know all these people, and I feel like I didn't write down any of the names. I'm going to write down Dawson Church. And really fast, who was the first guy you talked about?
Probably Thich Nhat Hanh. It's Thich N H A
Okay.
T H A H N. I'll send it to
Okay. There was another one there in the
you.
middle too, but we'll talk about Dawson Church.
So he's doing a lot of research right now and has been for the last 10 years or so, or probably longer, on observing with, you know, the various tools we have, like fMRIs and stuff, what the brain is doing. And he has begun to see how there's this stuff, I think it's called the medial prefrontal cortex. It's this kind of part of the brain that bridges things. And as you develop more connections in that area, what happens is your capacity to perceive what you've been talking about in terms of alignment, the oneness, the whole God, your capacity to be calm actually grows. Like it's like a muscle. Like you can only lift so much if your bicep is so big, right? And so there, he's got some beautiful meditations. He does EFT tapping, which I'm sure you know all about.
I just learned about that.
It's amazing. And you know, they've done the double blind study, so it's accepted finally. He does breath work, and he does a bunch of stuff, and he's literally put them all together into this thing he calls eco meditation. It's available
Nice.
on his website for free. You can download it, and it's a process whereby you activate all the things that will support the growing of this particular piece of the brain.
And see, that's wild because I learned about the God gene from Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'm sure you've heard of
Yes,
him. And I
I
was just
love
like,
Joe.
I loved science. I love God. And I needed something that brought the two to where I could understand. And like the fact that
Exactly.
he's all about the God gene, it made so much sense to me of like everything made sense, you
Yeah.
know, that it's in
Yeah.
us. It
Yes.
is a part of who we are. And imagine if people could really, I still can't even comprehend. So it's just a part of practicing that growth, right? It is a part of bringing
Yes.
up the DMT and it's a part of all of these things. But just that capacity of knowing that we are that powerful as a creator. Like
Yes.
we have God gene in us. Like
Yes.
that is insane power. And if people
Yes.
only knew that, like
Yeah.
I'm still learning, you guys. So if you want to learn, you're gonna have to learn with me because I'm figuring it out. But
Well, there's a
it's
lot
just
out there,
wild.
and you're learning while the researchers are learning, because Dawson
Right.
Church is doing this work now. And by the way, he was one of the guys who worked with Joe Dispenza, so that's another
Nice.
connection.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it's all happening right now. It's all
Yeah.
happening right now. So we just stay as close to we as we can to knowing what's possible, and do our own work. You know, we
Yeah.
got to do our own work. Everybody's got to do their own work, and then that's how we build. You know, I like to talk about the beloved community. You
Yeah.
know, Martin Luther King talked about this. He said, you know, we seek to create the beloved community, and this is going to take a change of heart as well as a change of circumstances. He
Right.
said it slightly differently. You have to
Yeah.
look up the quote to get it right.
Yeah. No, that's perfect though. And I just, this information is incredible. Mary, I'm super glad that you joined me for this conversation. I love and admire the work you're doing. And I always love it when I get lit on fire. I've had some great conversations today. That doesn't happen very often. Okay. Back-to-back conversations of just like, I get excited about things. I get excited about doing research. I get excited about reading and discovering more. So I know you guys are probably feeling the same way. All of Mary's information is in the notes of the podcast. So you guys can reach out, get into her community. Mary, you're definitely someone I will be following on social media as soon as we get off of here. I want to check out all the things. And I think that this is a conversation we'll have to circle back in a couple years. First of all, to see if I've grown up. Okay. Let's see if I've grown up, but.
Although I gave you 10 years on that one, so give yourself
Right.
some time.
Yeah. Yeah. But just to even, you know, I would love to do some of this research and be able to have a conversation about some of this work. And as it progresses, it would be great to circle back. So, is
Wonderful.
there anything that you'd want to leave with the listeners before we sign off? Any advice
Yeah,
or
I'll tell you
guidance?
one beautiful piece of advice you can act
Yep.
on right now. If you will take one mindful breath, that is the beginning of the intervention, right there. Right there. That's your doorway to freedom.
And that's in through the nose, you guys. I know I say this, in through the nose, out through the mouth, fill your belly, really just mindful. I think mindful breathing is powerful. We don't talk
Yeah.
enough about it. I take it for granted. And there's even an app you guys can put on your phone, literally, that will remind you. My watch will tell me mindfulness where I breathe.
Right.
So it's
Exactly.
interesting, but it does change your life. Mary, I appreciate you so much. Thanks for tuning in today, you guys. And listen, bitch, dream big. Life is too short to play small. Embrace who God called you to be. Own your shit and be brave as you step into your potential as a co-creator. Until next time, love yourself in the moment, no matter how flawed that may be. This is Brandon Lynette reminding you of your potential with a side of chaos. You are in the arena. Keep swinging.